I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Gaspron, how you doing?
I'm doing all right.
He's doing pretty good. You've played a lot of the new video games, the old Wolong Fallen Dynasty, which is good because this is the wind-up. And I'm Scott Tilford, and that is Josh Brown.
Good morning, Scott Tilford.
Good morning. We've had some coffee. We thought we'd do the podcast early in the morning. I'm talking about the latest video games, the latest talking points in the industry, or the latest pieces of news doing the rounds. And I didn't realize, or we didn't realize until last week, that Wolong Fallen Dynasty is on Game Pass.
On Game Pass.
It's right there.
Which completely changed my world, Scott Tilford, because I thought, if it's on Game Pass, I'm going to have to get it.
You've got no excuse.
And you know what? I was looking for a game like this to come along because I've been loving the VR. As you know, we did an entire podcast on it last week, and we did an extended Q&A video on it on the What Culture Gaming channel.
Yes,
but the thing about VR is that it's exhausting.
Right.
And when you're walking around your flat and you're pretending, or you're actually shooting monsters in Resident Evil 8 VR, which I'm going to talk about as well, it gets a little bit tiring. And sometimes you just want to lie on the couch and you want to play a video game on the flat screen. And Wolong has provided that. Wolong Fallen Dynasty is definitely a video game. I will say that
it's
about
one
it.
Of the video games of the year.
It is one of the video games
nailing
of
that.
The year.
I feel like the game's rollout's been kind of weird because I did play the beta, which is quite a considerable amount of game. Like, you got a big chunk of like the levels and everything. But the thing is, I wonder if we're on the cusp of people being a bit sick of, like, it's only really like only From Software can do this right. It almost feels like From Software are to the Soulsian genre what Overwatch was to the hero shooter, or like that idea of like we're only here for one of these. And I feel like it's anything From Software put out, they absolutely nail.
Yeah.
But then anyone else who tries to do it, like your Lords of the Fallen or your Surges or whatever, they never get up there.
From Software are absolutely, you know, the crown jewel of that entire subgenre, obviously. You know, they kicked it off and they have continued to innovate ever since.
Yes.
That said, as you may know, Scott Tilford, this year alone, I have already played a Souls-like clone in Mortal Shell.
Oh, God,
and
you
I
did.
I played about 10 of them last year.
Uh-huh.
So I'm very much of the opinion that there are good experiences out there, especially from Team Ninja, who have produced Wolong. You know, they previously created the two Neo games, the second of which I really enjoyed. And Wolong, as a set of mechanics, is very satisfying. You know, it's faster than a Souls game, despite keeping some of the core tenets of, obviously, you know, kind of like the bonfire system, which is, in this, sees you planting, you know, flags down at certain areas within the battlefield where enemies respawn when you go back. You're banking what are essentially souls to upgrade your character.
Mm-hmm.
But it does make a lot of changes. You know, like the character creation system is a little different. And the biggest difference across the board is a morale system at the heart of the game. So each enemy within a level has a different level of morale, which kind of like dictates how powerful they are.
Mm-hmm.
So it kind of is more about that than it is regular leveling up. The regular leveling up obviously helps.
Break their morale.
That's it, right?
Good.
So you can break their morale. So in order to gain morale, you have to plant these flags around the level, and there are some that act as checkpoints / bonfires, and there are others that are kind of hidden away that just give you a morale boost. You can get morale by avenging other players. You don't, like, see other players within the game, but in classic Soulsian fashion, you see where they died, so you can expend a healing item to gain a boost in morale and hopefully avenge them by killing the monster that killed them, and you get a little bonus by doing that. And it's all about kind of playing around with this morale system. You can do kind of special attacks where you essentially have a Y button, so Y on Xbox, that does a kind of heavy attack, but here it's called a spirit attack that kind of extends, that kind of like spirit is what you build up to get your morale up. So enemies can do a spirit attack on you, mm-hmm. and if you dodge it in a specific way, you can take like
oh,
a level
cool.
from them and add it to yourself, which is kind of satisfying. So you're kind of playing around with that.
Mm-hmm.
So it does have changes from the From Software kind of formula. And like I said, it is overall much faster and based around combos, and you're not waiting necessarily for telegraphed attacks. But it's another one, which I think is interesting, that's based more around parrying. So you do have a block button, but like I said, you're encouraged to parry because when they do those spirit attacks, the only way to kind of like deflect them is to press B at the right time to deflect the attack, knock them off guard, break their spirit, and then do a powerful counterattack. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of, it's more Sekiro-ish like Sekiro like than it is, than it is kind of like Dark Souls, I suppose. More inspired by that game.
Okay. The thing is, like, I'm curious at this point what someone does to differentiate, because I feel like it almost, to some people, like, if you're playing all of them, it is going to be enough to just be like, here's another Souls thing. All you Souls people will go play it anyway. But then, what was it, when we started talking about it, you said, like, it is just, it's another one of them. Like, is that just ultimately where it lands?
It's more because of the technical issues of the game. Like, I'm so pleased I got this on Game Pass and didn't pay full price for it, because even on next-gen systems, which I'm playing it on, the performance isn't good.
Right.
And that sucks in boss battles, of course. I'm playing it on favor frame rate. It doesn't seem to matter whether I'm on performance mode or the quality mode.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the frame rate just has weird hiccups now and again.
That's kind of inexcusable at this point.
It really is, especially coming off something like this team has already made Neo 1 and Neo 2, and Wolong, while it is ambitious in certain ways from a graphical standpoint, it doesn't like look like a major step up.
I remember thinking that on the beta thing.
It looks nice, especially in certain cutscenes. Your character model in particular looks incredible, but like in the actual gameplay itself, I don't know what the game is giving me that justifies such a massive drop in performance, and that is a real shame, because it's not like it's loading these massive levels. Like, each mission that you go on is a discrete level, and those levels are big, but it's not like a big interconnected open world. When you get to the end of the level, you get warped back to like the bonfire, or you just move back, or you move onto the next discrete mission, and I just don't know what it's giving me to justify if, the kind of technical hiccups, and that's such a shame.
Yeah, I wonder if they were developed, because is it cross-gen or is it only on new systems?
That's a good question. I'm not entirely sure.
I'm not entirely sure either, but I wonder, because the last couple of years behind the scenes have been quite tumultuous in terms of target systems, and then various devs ditching their last-gen versions right before launch, and were trying to prioritize newer systems regardless. I wonder if that was the case here, and they were maybe initially aiming for a wider set of systems. I mean, Neo 2 was, what, 2018, 2019?
Relatively recent,
And, I guess, like, this is...
Time is a flat circle, right?
I think the pandemic just blows all that stuff out. But I think, if it's been development for a while, chances are that they would have had that older mentality of aiming for the other systems and stuff. But how's the difficulty? How's the gotcha? Because the thing that made me go... Because I think, for me, it's like, there's a certain... I don't know if it's because I'm getting older. Mm. I don't know if it's because life has struggles, and I can't be bothered with this all the BS in these games anymore. Not to say, so far, I've beaten all of them. Like, other than the real offshoot ones, like Mortal Shell, I didn't finish.
Yeah.
But the main stuff, your Demon Souls, your Dark Souls, your Sekiros, your Bloodborne's, flying through all them like nobody's business, loving the Surge as well, and Surge 2. But at some point, I can't be bothered. I can't be bothered with a gacha where it's like, oh, like in Neo 2, I didn't finish Neo 2, because there's just like enemies that just fall out of a tree and kill you, and I'm like, I can't do it. Is there a lot of the gacha, oh my God, I'm going back to the checkpoint energy in this?
Not really, you know.
Okay.
Interestingly, I'm going to definitely get this boss fight in a list, because the first boss fight
heard
in
about
the game
this first boss.
Is an absolute slag. Like, he's an absolute villain. He will tool you into the ground.
Okay.
Because he's one of those bosses that forces you to learn the basics of this game, because you might go into it like playing it like From Software, Dark Souls, or even a Sekiro.
Trying to poke the old bum.
Absolutely. And the game just like isn't that. So the first boss is a real test of the new systems, that morale system, that parrying system. Mm. And you kind of have to master that. But the thing is, once you do get over that first boss, which is difficult, you'll kind of have all the tools you'll need to then complete the rest of the game.
Right.
I'm just over halfway through, probably like 60-70% of the way through the game. And no,
you've flown through it.
Oh man, this is the thing, right? Because it's really Moorish. The gameplay systems are really satisfying. It's just the technical issues that are a shame. But the rest of the game, actually, for me, isn't all that difficult. I find that I often feel overpowered, especially in certain boss fights. There's only one other boss fight since that first one that I've died on. Right. Everything else I've managed to do first time just by brute forcing my way through. And that's because the game gives you a lot of powerful weapons if you're doing if you're exploring the areas. You know, if you get your morale high enough, you can go toe-to-toe with anyone. Mm-hmm. And the game is very liberal with giving you companions on your quests. So often you'll have one or maybe even two pretty good NPCs at your side by all time, taking on enemies with you, because the game itself can be played in co-op. And that kind of just mitigates a lot of the challenge, but it's still very satisfying to play through. It's just, yeah, it definitely has challenging areas and a few difficulty spikes where you might feel a little underleveled randomly out the blue. But overall, it doesn't feel as much like dictated by those gotcha moments as maybe some of the other games from this developer.
That's definitely very encouraging for me, because I thought Elden Ring was such a perfect step in the right direction to not just try and catch you out, even though they did have bits and pieces in Elden Ring where it's like you're in like a certain dungeon and you get caught out, a certain creature summons or whatever, but it largely felt fair. And I also thought that in Elden Ring, at least they give you enough tools to deal with that in the moment, where it's like you do have the ash summons or like just, I don't know, just in general, the level layouts that you get away from something rather than just kill you in one hit. So that's like encouraging. But overall, is it like, because the thing is, I feel like right now it's like each one of these games, if it's not a FromSoft game, has like one gimmick. Like Mortal Shell was like, oh, you can harden yourself to tank a hit as you attack. The Surge, you have the limb damage. Like Lords of the Fallen, it's all like this gambling XP system where you, if you don't bank it at a checkpoint, you roll it over to the next checkpoint. Wolong's is kind of the morale system, like you said.
Yeah.
But I guess like it's that overall thing of like whether, because I did see a tweet too in the rounds of like, is you know, are these the best side developers? If you're not going to be into From Software, you're better off with the Neo games and Wolong. Like, they've kind of carved out their own little side niche at this point.
Yeah, they have. And, you know, this game does do things different from the kind of From Software mold, like I was saying. You do have the morale system, and you also have, like, a kind of a magic system based on certain elements. So you have, like, you know, fire, frost, lightning and stuff, which can be used to counteract the attacks of other enemies who, you know, might be using certain elements themselves. If you come across a wizard who's, you know, using fire, you can counter that with frost. It sounds simple, but that's just a kind of interesting system that's in there. You've got like those spells, you've got these martial arts moves. There are a lot of systems in there. The only issue that I have with it, even though I'm really enjoying it and have been absolutely, you know, nonstop playing it all weekend, is just that kind of familiarity, not with the genre as a whole, but from the Neo games in particular. You know, I love Neo 2, but the issue I had with that game was that it was just a little bit too long and that you were encouraged to jump into
a
lot.
The prequel too long.
Very good, hey. You were encouraged to do a lot of the side missions to make sure you were, you know, strong enough to take on the main missions. But the thing is, those side missions were kind of bland. They would reuse levels, maybe put you through a level backwards, change the time of day. Like, they were just, like, they felt like filler. This has that, but it feels less focused on it. It feels like I can ignore it a little bit more. And, like, it's a good game. I would recommend it, especially on Game Pass. I wouldn't pick it up full price at the moment just because of the technical issues. The only slight disappointment I have is that when it was first announced, I thought it would be more than just an iteration on Neo 2. I thought it would be something new. I thought it would look visually more interesting. I thought the level design might be a little bit more ambitious, but it is just an iteration on what the devs have done before, and that's good if you just want more of the same. And it kind of is, it makes it maybe an easier sell if you love those games and you're like, well, I want another one. Here it is. This is that game with a few tweaks. It's kind of like going from Dark Souls 1 to kind of Bloodborne. You can tell they're working on the same foundation, even though they have different kind of thematic edges and different mechanics, but you can tell they're kind of like cut from the same cloth. But I wanted something a little bit different, a major overhaul.
Well, I thought that's what they were going for when it is like a new franchise, or like in theory it's a whole new franchise. And I guess we'll see how it does, because it hasn't been reviewing that well. It's sort of like sixes and sevens kind of thing.
Yeah.
But I wonder how much that leans on, like, are people just quite I don't think people are overall tired of the entire genre. It's just that you're in the shadow of Elden Ring, and I just wonder, like, that whole thing of, like, sometimes you get genre domination to a point where, like, everything is always going to be in the shadow of the main leader.
Yeah.
And it's like From Software only excelled with Elden Ring. So you're not going to get anywhere near that, really.
I think this one definitely does shoot itself in the foot, because, you know, it's inexcusable to have a difficult game and throw you a massive, you know, screen-filling boss battle and then have the frame rate tank into, like, what feels like the tens, where you can't keep up with the attacks. You're getting killed because the frame rate is killing you. I think the issue with this one in particular isn't necessarily genre fatigue, though that might play a part. It is more the technical shortcomings and the familiarity and how croaky and kind of, you know, wonky the entire experience feels when you kind of expect that little bit of polish, especially after an Elden Ring, which was so big, so ambitious, so polished, and so beautiful at the same time. This definitely feels like it was chucked together with duct tape and was just pushed out the door, you know, which is a shame because there's so much potential there.
Yeah, I guess they'll patch the hell out of it, like, or they'll patch enough of it going forward, because they had the big old beta. It is on Game Pass. A lot of people are going to be playing this, so it feels like there is a big reason to get it right. Like, yeah.
You're a stickler for trophy data, I know this, Scott.
I can be.
About who, you know, obviously, the amount of people who jump into a game versus the amount of people actually getting through it.
Yes.
Since about, you know, four missions into the game, I would say the percentages for beating those boss battles have been like 5%.
No way.
I think people are just kind of perhaps bouncing off, maybe because of that first boss. Maybe it's just a little bit too difficult and they think, screw this, if the entire game is going to be like this, I don't want to play it. Which is kind of a shame because, like I say, once you beat that first boss, everything else so far has been kind of a cakewalk.
I think that's always fascinating when you go through an Xbox game for the first time, if you're in that first week or that first month. And like, when I went through Hi-Fi Rush, after about chapter 3 or 4, every single trophy was a rare trophy. In terms of the bosses, the level completion, the unlocks, it was just like, oh my god, no one else is going through this. To the point where when I got the final one, it was only like 2 or 3% of people had finished the game. I'd be curious, I guess I might do a YouTube poll or a Twitter poll or something. How long do people take to get through a game? Because we know that for the most part, like 90% of people don't finish their games at all, but how long do they give them a chance? Or do they try and prioritize it in that first week or that first month? I wonder whether people get into something like Wolong and are just like, this is me for the next few weeks or the next few months. Obviously, you're up against things like Resident Evil 4 or whatever in the next few weeks. But yeah, I'm curious what people's attitude is towards a game like this.
I can see a lot of people bouncing off it, especially if they're just trying it on Game Pass. Like I said, like the first boss combined with the kind of not great visuals combined with the technical issues, I don't think it makes a good first impression at all. In fact, I think I messaged you when I was playing the opening. I was saying, this is a ropey video game. Unfortunately, it does get better when you get into the groove of it and the mechanics are satisfying. It just is that shame of it doesn't wow you at all, and it's one of those games that kind of delays its title credits drop for about, you know,
that can be brilliant,
which can be brilliant, but it delays that for a little bit until you've properly gotten through like the first boss and seen a lot of the game, and it's supposed to be a big wow moment, but you just kind of think, ooh, I hope the rest of the game is better than this. Unfortunately it is, but it's like, like I said, not a good first impression.
I do think that in general, the thing I'm kind of getting at with the, it's not, it is kind of fatigue, but it's also like when you know what you're in for, it's like there's a certain amount of like fortitude you have to sort of steel yourself to put up with these games. I guess that's why I was asking about the gotcha stuff, or just that general idea of like, I am signing myself up for some BS or some difficulty or some like challenge of an evening. And when maybe you just want something a bit easier.
It's a, the last thing, it like definitely is challenging. You know, it might not be as difficult as some of the other games, even Nioh 2, but there is a challenge there and there's something to learn, which I think is integral to the success of these games, because I don't think, as much as we might, you know, want them to be a little bit easier as we age and we've been through so many, I think it's, you need that thrill of learning a skill almost in this, the set of mechanics in Wolong and new enough that it feels satisfying to learn those skills. That's which cool. I will say, which is still really cool.
That's cool. I think, I was going to try to transition into something that I've been playing, which is Final Fantasy 13.
Oh! Because
I'm a sick individual and I'm going to Japan at the end of the month, and so I'm very much loving the Japanese RPGs, the JRPGs of the world. Final Fantasy 13 is the one that is very much a low point in that franchise, and I know the game has a cult classic fandom. There are a whole generation of people who played that as their first one and will defend it to the death.
Yeah.
You're all wrong. It's right. The worst thing, and it's horrible.
Excuse me, first and foremost, how come a year ago when I said I wanted to play a Final Fantasy 13, you laughed me out the room and taught me not to do it, and now here you are, March 7th, 2023, having played Final Fantasy 13. What is wrong with you?
I wanted one of them that I've not finished, and 13 is one of the only ones that I've not finished, because when I first played it back in whatever year it came out, 2009 or something, I just bounced off it. I did the first sort of 2-3 hours, and I was like, I hate the dialogue. Like, visually beautiful. The combat system is what absolutely kills it, as is still the case now. And it's one of those things where I just wanted to find a Final Fantasy that I hadn't finished, that I know has this cult, sort of cult fandom around it. Because if you find someone who likes 13, they'd love 13 so much. And it's the, it was almost became a meme, because it's the entry in the franchise that gets good after 20 hours. And it's just that thing where everyone was like, I can't put up with 20 hours. And I was just curious. I was like, how much do I have to play before it like kicks in a bit? Is it actually 20 hours? Because there is a bit where the game opens up after about 10 hours and it sort of changes a bit more, where you've got like a more open-ended approach to the levels and everything. But for that opening three, I did about 3-4 hours before I tapped out. It's literally, we've got corridors where you're running down. There's no merchants. There's no real, the combat is the worst.
Yeah, explain this to me. You said that's the thing that kills it dead. Why is it bad? Like, well, what did they change? What do they add? What's going on with that?
So they literally make it one button combat. Like you have, every time you go into any encounter in a Final Fantasy game or, you know, most JRPGs, you have turn-based combat. You have some sort of strategy to it. Like, oh, I'm going to apply an elemental attack to this dude. Then I'm going to attack over here. Then I'm going to get my other person to do this. And there's a like sort of light strategic element to it while you plan out those battles. Final Fantasy 13, because I know the game had a hell of a development. It started as something else, and then it was like this whole weird ramshackle approach to it. And I know that defenders of the game say that the combat does get more fleshed out over time. I got as far as unlocking the paradigm system, which is where you can start like rotating out various AI scripts for yourself and your companions, but you only ever play as one character. Mm. And so it's one of those things where the combat itself is just, you have like three options for the first like 2 hours, where it's you can hit auto battle, which will automatically attack. You can manually assign the same attack, or you can do this move called Blitz, which is like a sort of wider attack. If you're playing as Lightning, there are different characters, but they only ever have one standard attack and one special move. So it's either hit auto battle and skip the stage of manually planning it, or go into the abilities window and manually tell them to attack anyway. There's just nothing to it. So nothing. And so like eventually you get the paradigm thing, and you can start being like, okay, I want Lightning to be more offensively, you know, like charge forward. I want one of my other characters to focus on healing. You can kind of set it up like Final Fantasy 12 had things like that. But that's it. It's so just nothing. And you're putting up with hours of the worst dialogue in some of Final Fantasy's history, and with some of the weirdest world setup, where it's all about these... The idea of the world is cool. The idea of these like giant unknowable gods that like humanity answers to, called like the Falsi, and like they sort of they take people and curse them, and then they give them roles, and it's just capitalism gods and whatever. Cool. But they're like these sort of unknowable like eldritch gods kind of thing. That's cool, this idea of this weird sort of dystopian future where humanity is like stuck in cocoons. And
you speak my language. Are you making me excited?
Thematically,
about it?
It's brilliant. Well, it's not brilliant, but thematically, it's interesting. Or it gets you, it's engaging. And the opening is like gorgeous. But like I said, gameplay wise, it's just so boring. And it's like the level design is terrible because it's all just corridor based. I turned the map off so I didn't have to look at how corridor based the actual world was.
Right, so you
and
do.
Just to try and explore it a bit more. But yeah, the combat is the thing that largely drags it down, and just kind of how messy the story is. And I know that a lot of people like have grown up to love it, but I genuinely think that's because it was one of the first ones they played.
Yes.
And it's like maybe that thing where if you spend enough time with it, then you fall in love with the characters and the world. And so when things finally start changing at the 10-20 hour mark, then you can start to love it. But I think the level of investment required versus every other Final Fantasy is too big.
See, I don't really love turn-based combat, as you know. So the idea that I can kind of just almost skip it is very enticing.
You're still watching all those animations. It doesn't feel fun
time.
Or anything. Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Like Final Fantasy 12, when they re-released it, the Evilist edition or whatever you call it, let you speed stuff up more. I think you could do that in the original one as well. So if you like the idea of, it's definitely in the re-release. You can just tell your team to like auto, okay, fit this mold of attack. And then every time we have an encounter, just burn through it. Okay, get to the next thing. And a lot of people who love 12 love that sort of like automated feel to the combat. It's definitely a thing that a lot of RPGs in general have like flirted with, that idea of like, oh, we don't really like the turn-based stuff. Mm. We'll just let you automate it. And you can, even in the re-releases of Final Fantasy 7, 8, and 9, when they got remastered, not the remake of 7, you can speed everything up like times 10 and everything. So there are some things like that. Bravely Default has that as well. Like I'm not there to skip the game. Like it's just, what are we doing? I think, I don't know, like it's, if it was the exact same enemy and I just want to grind some stats out, then like fine. Mm. But like the literal state of what you are doing in 13 is entering combat, watching the animation, everyone gets ready to fight, hit a button, they just do a move. You don't do anything other than tell them to auto battle.
Yeah.
And then eventually maybe you get a different move, but that's it. And then I started looking on the Reddit threads and the old threads from, because it's 15 years or whatever it is, years old, and it is people just saying like, does it ever get better than this? And then the people who are fans going like, nah, not really, but we love it. And so yeah, I think it's just, it's a weird thing where like I said, I was about 3 hours ish big story events happen. Troy Baker's in this, one of his very, very first roles.
Interesting.
He's brilliant. I love Snow, the character that he plays. He like plays this like leader of the rebellion. He's called Snow, and he's all like motivated by what heroes do, and he's just like, well, I'll save you because that's what heroes do. And I'm like, that's great, he's fun. They have a really schmaltzy romance scene where a bunch of fireworks are going off and he's flying through some fireworks with like his partner.
Lovely.
Making out in the fireworks. And I was like, this is nice. But it doesn't make up for what you are literally doing in that game.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
I don't know about you, but sometimes I hear that something gets better after 10 hours or 20 hours. And in my mind, stupidly,
yes,
I think,
you want to know,
that's fine, I can do that. And then you realize how long 20 hours actually is. That's the entirety of War Long, more
yes.
or less. You know what I mean? Like, that's a full big game. And I've probably done half of that over mm-hmm. the weekend. And that feels like a long time.
Well, I was like doing...
I would only be halfway to getting to the good bits of Final Fantasy 13 if I had done that.
Totally. And it's like, that's the entire Lord of the Rings trilogy, extended.
Yeah.
Like, you could do... And I was going through this doing, like I said, the first few hours, just going like all of Fellowship could have happened now, all of Two Towers, all of Return of the King as separate individual installments, and how much story was in there, how much propulsion was in there. Yeah, I tried with Final Fantasy 13, but I couldn't. It's just not well made. And if the more I looked into the background of it, the making of it, I was like, this isn't worth my time. Like,
yeah.
This is a thing that was all over the place in development. Not that I don't love certain things like the art direction. I like Lightning. I like the characters for the most part. A lot of people hate Hope. He's like this little kid who gets like, something happens to him and it's why he's sort of like super mopey and annoying, but like whatever. But yeah, it's one of those things where it's a very divisive installment, and I thought maybe in 2023, going back to it after the dust had settled, maybe I can appreciate what's there. No, I can appreciate what's there in terms of everything other than the gameplay.
Yeah.
Because that thing just kind of sucks. Speaking of gameplay though, you played Resident Evil 8 VR.
Yes.
Tell me about the virtual reality.
Oh my God, man. My friend, obviously, briefly talked about this in last week's podcast, but it was more about the hardware. It was more about PSVR 2
yes.
as a whole. Since then, I've been primarily playing Resident Evil 8 because I only touched the first hour or so this time last week. And now I'm in Castle Demetresque, and I feel like I've got a proper good grasp on the game. And it is beautiful.
Is it better than the base game?
I think so.
That's good.
I definitely think so. You know, the base game is excellent. You know, I absolutely loved it at launch. But the thing it was lacking for me was that element of horror. You know, I loved its kind of more fantasy-based world. You know, it obviously starts, the entire game starts with this kind of fairy tale reading that kind of mirrors what's about to happen in the plot. And while I loved the atmosphere, it didn't scare me in VR. It scares me, you know.
Okay.
The monster designs seem so much creepier. To have a werewolf, a full-scale werewolf, kind of like running at you
right.
in VR is terrifying. You get that sense of scale. They feel intimidating. They feel massive. They feel like they could rip you apart, which is very scary. And I had one of those jaw-dropping VR moments where I was going through the kind of bowels of the castle. I was in the distillery down beneath the kind of opulent, walkways and halls of the upper part of the castle. I was down in the kind of like dungeon, and it was pitch black. So I was using my flashlight that I was obviously using with one of the controllers. I was looking around.
Is that map one-to-one where you're looking? Like,
yes.
Yeah.
The map's one-to-one. So I'm literally using my hand to kind of shine light on certain areas that are otherwise pitch black, and you can hear a kind of monster around the corner, which are the kind of ghouls that haunt the basement, that carry swords, have their hoods up.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just such a tense moment walking through, seeing them emerge and trying to fight them while you were trying to keep your light on them.
Right.
And I just thought, this is what VR is made for. This is precisely why everyone raves about this technology, because it can take a combat encounter that is relatively straightforward but still exciting in the base game and transform just the act of getting to it, walking through a darkened area into something that is incredibly memorable because you feel like you're there. You can hear the 3D audio. The sense of depth that you get in the sense of immersion that you get when you're shining that flashlight and it's kind of cutting through the darkness is like... It's VR at its best. It's where you kind of forget about the potential shortcomings of the tech. You forget that you're kind of in a room and you feel like you're in that dungeon.
I never thought of the scale stuff as a really good point. Like, I never thought of, like, yeah, the idea of an actual full-sized werewolf coming at you, or like the size of Lady Dimitrescu or something like that. Like, the idea, even the Duke, when you finally meet him, like, he's this huge dude towering above you kind of thing. Like, yeah, that's like a really good thing that only VR could give you. You talk about the various like distinctions of a VR version of a game. It's like, well, scale is a massive part of that.
Definitely.
A lot of people sharing clips of just the beginning of Call of the Mountain, where like one of the tall necks like walks over you and you see the size of its foot and everything. I think that's a really cool, just a cool facet of VR that's worth mentioning.
And you definitely get that in the castle scene in particular, because obviously when you first get to the village, you can see the castle in the distance. And when you actually get up close and you're looking at it, you know, from down below, you get the sense of scale of the castle. You go in, you're looking respectfully at Lady Dimitrescu, you know what I mean? And then she is incredibly tall. Obviously, she's picking you up. You kind of feel like you're getting thrown around. You get the sense of scale of her. You know, this massive, tall vampire woman. And then you've got the big sort of werewolf. What would you even describe him as? Like the chief werewolf guy who's got like the big hammer, who you see right at the beginning. He gets in your face at one point. You get Heisenberg in your face.
Oh, it's just a turret bit later as well.
Yeah, yeah. That'll which I'm excited to do. And it's just, it is that kind of like one-to-one scale that I think... adds so much to the VR experience. Like I said, makes those kind of basic enemies feel even more threatening. And when you're, you know, running away and you're trying to just frantically shoot at these things, so you're emptying a clip into them, but then you realize you've got no bullets. You're trying to frantically reload in the dark. You're getting your shotgun out. You know, you're pumping one guy full of lead. You're trying to throw a knife at the other. It just has that kind of extra tactility that obviously you get from VR that the base game didn't have. And for as much as I love the base game and would recommend it to anyone, if you've got a VR headset, it's worth going through the game again for this added experience, because I think it does add a lot to the horror, especially.
I feel like 7 and 8, Resident Evil 7 and 8, both work so well as VR experiences because they have like things happen to your limbs or things happen to your body quite a lot. And it's like those are the things that trick your brain to feeling different things when you're in VR, which is like weird because I don't think that either of them were set out to be VR experiences. Maybe more so with 8, because I guess the tech would overlap a bit more. But yeah, I just feel like both of these work so well. When I think about the different parts of the story, different parts of the different set pieces in 8, things like that mech bit, which were kind of stupid, like too stupid to me, like a bit too stupid in the game, main game. If you just kind of go with it in terms of like a set of controls or like a set piece showdown in VR, that is way more exciting.
Definitely, and I think Resident Evil 7 felt like it was made with VR in mind more than this, just in the way that characters were getting in your face. Like you said, things were happening to your body, people were getting up close and personal, and it felt uncomfortable. Resident Evil 8 doesn't have that all the way through, but it still has it here and there. Especially within Castle Dimitrescu. And there was one moment where you first kind of meet Heisenberg and he throws a bit of rebar kind of through your gut and then he suffocates you in metal. And that was actually really scary in VR because it feels literally like you're getting encased in metal in real life. Your vision's kind of going. And you kind of, it tricked my brain for a second to feel like I was getting, you know.
Like you're stuck.
I was stuck and I couldn't move my limbs. And it kind of had that weird phantom effect. Which I didn't obviously get in the original version and kind of thought Heisenberg was a little weird and lame at times, but like even just that being translated to VR worked so much better. And it's just one of those experiences when it's happening to you and not a character, you can kind of feel it a little bit more.
That sounds cool. If I ever get a PSVR 2, which I'm planning, hopefully later this year, I'm still hoping they drop the price a little bit. But yeah, the Resident Evils would be the most immediate thing I would go to because I never played Resident Evil 7 in VR. But I did do a little bit of Resident Evil 4 in VR, and hopefully later in this year, they'll have the VR version of Resident Evil 4 remake out as well, which would be cool. Let's talk a bit about some video game news to round out the podcast. A new Dragon Ball Z Tenkaichi game is coming. the one game in the Dragon Ball video game side of things that always brought in the wider audience. I feel like Tenkaichi was always kind of up there with your Tekken's, your Street Fighters in terms of a conversation, in terms of something that people played when they were growing up. This was announced during the Dragon Ball Games Battle Hour 2023 stream. We don't know which developer's doing it, which is kind of fascinating because Arc System Works did Dragon Ball FighterZ, which for me is for my money, is the best Dragon Ball game ever made. If you want something that can replicate the fighting, the speed of the fighting, and the spectacle of it. But you also have Cyber Connect just did Dragon Ball Z Kakarot, which got pretty close in terms of the spectacle, but the combat for me wasn't as good in Kakarot, and I got a bit sick of it over time. We don't know who's making the new sort of reboot of Tenkaichi, and it seems like it is a reboot. It doesn't have a number attached to it yet.
Yeah.
So overall, I feel like they're just revisiting the idea of Tenkaichi, which isn't that far off Kakarot, like in terms of like 3D fighting and that kind of thing.
That's it, right? That's why I think I wouldn't mind if it was the Kakarot developers, because that's almost a Tenkaichi game in terms of its combat. It might not necessarily have the same amount of depth, and maybe it's more based around kind of RPG systems and hitting off specials and stuff, but like you said, that sort of 3D fighting element is definitely there, and that's what you want to see from Tenkaichi, right? And I don't know what this game is going to be in a good way, because the way it was announced, you know, looking back at the older games, I didn't know if it was going to be a sort of remake with new stuff added on. Mm. Obviously, you see Goku's... what transformation is that? Super Saiyan God?
What color is his hair?
It's blue.
That's Super Saiyan God, Super Saiyan.
There we go. Super Saiyan God, Super Saiyan transformation at the end, which obviously indicates that they're definitely putting new stuff into it. But is that going to be... Is it going to be like a brand new experience built from the ground up? Or are they going to essentially take what worked before, remake that, and then add an extra campaign on the end for Dragon Ball Super or whatnot?
Because my memories are blurring over. There were so many of these games. I had the one that was on Game Boy Advance, I think.
Right.
And there was one that my wife had on DS for a while. But there's the Budokai Tenkaichi series, and there's the main Tenkaichi series?
Just Budokai, I think. Dragon Ball Z Budokai. That's like the one-on-one, almost Tekken-style fighting game.
Whereas Tenkaichi was more like a 3D arena fighter, which has kind of become the staple of what people do for anime games these days. The Demon Slayer game is phenomenal, and that's very much an arena fighter. So we'll see what happens with that, but it's cool just mentioning that Tenkaichi is coming back. The next news thing is that another Ori game is coming, and originally Ori and the Blind Forest, then Ori and the Will of the Wisps. This has been leaked from the same leaker that mentioned Metroid Dread before launch. Interestingly though, it doesn't seem like it's from Moon Studios, who did the first two games, because they said back in 2020, that they were aiming their sights even higher with a new action RPG, and they signed with Private Division. Also, as of February 23rd, Moon CEO Thomas Mailer, this is all written up by VGC, but he was just tweeting a few things, saying, "Our next project is going to make or break us. Either we manage to revolutionize the ARPG genre, the action RPG genre, or we'll slowly fade away into the distance." While all of this is scary, I love the challenge. Diablo, Pillars of Eternity, he's got POE, I think it'll be Pillars of Eternity, etc. We're coming for you, may the best one win. So it seems like if they're doing all that, there's no way they can just squeeze out a side Ori game.
Yeah, probably not.
Also, you know, Moon Studios, I don't have that many details to hand, but I remember a whole bunch of things going on with them across the pandemic, various reports coming out from inside Moon Studios as to their general work culture, and just sort of various issues that need to be addressed in terms of the, I think it was the way that I guess various team members were being spoken to and things like that. So I wonder how doable any of this is.
Yeah.
And I also, I'm doubly curious, like, who do you give Ori to that can nail that? Because the end of Will of the Wisps, not to do spoilers, is very definitive. I would just cap that franchise there. As much as I adore it, I don't know what you can even do with a part three, considering what happens at the end of two.
I wonder if it's just too valuable for Xbox to give up, even if it's handed off to, like, a new developer. Because Ori was always... like a bright spot for the Xbox when it had no games. Mm-hmm. People, it wasn't a system seller by any means,
no.
But people would hold it up as this critically acclaimed franchise with two, you know, amazing installments to say, look at what Xbox is doing. It's investing in these kind of like smaller, artier titles, these great platformers, and it doesn't necessarily need the big budget shooters or whatever. So I wonder whether Ori is such a kind of jewel in Microsoft's crown that they want to keep it going no matter what. But it is interesting. Thing, because it does raise the question of, they have so many studios, but who takes it on? Who continues the franchise? And in what way? Like you said, the ending of Will of the Wisps is a little bit definitive. Like, do they do something radically different, or do they just kind of continue in that same vein? As someone who played those two games back-to-back, they were almost too similar for my liking.
Right.
Like, the innovations that come in the second game are really good, but it was almost a mistake to do them so close to each other, because they are so similar in a lot of ways, and it was a kind of iterative change.
Yeah, I love the combat so much in Will of the Wisps. I feel like that's like a huge step up from considering like how like ranged everything is, like almost forced to be in one, but that's such a minor thing. Like, you're still doing the same exploration. It's like like if you played a bunch of Metroids in a row, you would still be like, well, this is the same approach to level design, which is fair enough. But yeah, I'm curious what they do with it. I feel like I just have zero faith in Xbox Studios, like in terms of an overall overarching, actually get anything out the door approach to gaming. So I'll have more faith in this when Starfield starts coming out, when, you know, Avowed gets detailed a bit more, or anything happens from any of their teams where they have anything in motion. That would be good. The final quick thing is that The Finals has been shown off, which is the new game from ex-DICE developers, which has kind of been doing the rounds as it's almost like a weird sort of like virtual reality tournament type thing where everyone's jacking in. It seems like they're jacking into like this competition, but the main thing that it's being sold on is environmental destruction to like an unprecedented degree. However, it's not that far off Red Faction. Like if you played Red Faction back on the PS2, you could blow a hole in any wall and shoot a dude through the wall or whatever. It's just that times 10. So a lot of the footage is doing the rounds now in terms of people getting hands-on with the, you know, like code that's a bit further through development, where people are blowing away entire walkways so players fall down, and where you're blowing away the floor where the checkpoint is that you're trying to defend to get easier access to it, and changing the way that you approach, like, I guess, first-person multiplayer. What do you think of this in terms of, like, a Battlefield contender?
I think the tech looks sick, like the scale of destruction in those multiplayer maps that we've seen so far looks really amazing and kind of mind-blowing at times. Like you said, the ability to decimate entire bridges to kind of block off a certain objective, to blow out the floor from underneath someone, to get rid of an entire level of a map. Like, that is awesome. It's just, for me, the game that is housed in isn't appealing to me. We recently did, well, not you and I, but on What Culture Gaming, a list went up about like the worst icks in video games. Something that just kind of like
Jules's title.
Something that just kind of like puts you off a game when you see it. And for me, I think it is that kind of sort of reality TV sort of framing that some games have, where it's where it's just something televised. It's a sport. You know, we're shooting each other for sport. It's got these kind of over the top kind of like visuals. We've got these announcers and stuff.
Like Destruction All-Stars.
That just isn't it for me. Right. I don't necessarily vibe with that kind of aesthetic or that tone. So it's a shame because I love the tech side of it, but the shooting and the framework wasn't for me.
I think I'm more just in it for like what the gameplay possibilities are for the detonation stuff. Like we were talking before recording about like whatever their different game modes are. Some of them are like defend this point. I think there's like a basic team deathmatch mode. I was watching Skillup's video on it, and they were saying that like in general match times are quite short, and you sort of like the whole point is to just decimate this environment and not get sick of it before you move on to the next thing. And so I'm curious on what they let you do, because I remember when Rainbow Six Siege was first being shown off, and I think it was Siege, and it was that whole mode where you had to like extract a hostage.
Yeah.
And you were sort of like, people would detonate the roof and then fall in and then defeat the team and extract like in unique ways every time. And I'm like, that's what I want. I need this sort of like EA Levolution approach to environments to factor into the goals themselves. And I need to be able to think in a different way, because I need to start thinking of like, if I need to get up to a top of a building, maybe I can detonate a wall somewhere else and make it fall to the side, and we can climb up that or something. Things that like, it should reward you for thinking in that way, and not just be this really cool sort of like physics-y tech demo. For me, the thing that'll differentiate it and get it, because I feel like a lot of people are quite sick of what you just said, like the whole it's wacky in an online, it's this weird future where we're all desensitized, and I'm just like, we've done this to death at this point. It needs to have a bit more of its own identity, and I feel like the tech side of it is what they're leaning on or trying to lean on a bit more, but you still get a bit of that virtual reality stuff. When people are killed in this, they explode into like pixels.
Yes.
And there are various superpowers that you can activate that are all just like hacks around the game, which that stuff reminds me of like Hyperscape, which is one of the games that just died. We just did another list on life service games with shockingly short lifespans, and Hyperscape is like 2 years.
Like,
so yeah.
Yeah, like the actual gunplay itself and the kind of feedback, the visual feedback you get from a kill or you get from taking health off someone reminded me so much of Overwatch. And while I like that in Overwatch, I don't want an Overwatch clone. It's just a shame that watching the footage, I just kind of thought, I wish this level of destruction was in a Battlefield game or a different kind of first-person shooter, because it's cool that it's here. But I want to interact with that tech in a slightly different way from the modes that I have at least seen so far in this closed beta. I want to either do it in single player, where you do get those moments like you were saying, where you need to get to an objective. What's the most creative way I can get to that objective by destroying the environment and using it as a means of navigation? But I just don't think that'll necessarily come through with the game modes that I've seen so far. Like, there are definitely interesting opportunities, but it doesn't seem quite focal for me. And that might seem weird considering how good the tech is and how much you can do, but yeah, I don't know. I don't know if it'll come together.
It's it reminds me a bit. It's like if you took Overwatch's sort of like the it's not like a Twitch shooter, but the twitchiness of an Overwatch, the way that you track people on that and the sort of like the way that you're rewarded through the UI, like the different, the skull icon popping up and then their name popping up of who you just killed, mixed with the destruction of Battlefield. And then also it reminded me of Lawbreakers, you know, the failed Cliffy B game, in terms of the idea that you always have full 360 motion because the jumps in this are humongous. And it was like some of the gameplay clips, you're like, you've got a bead on a guy and they jump all the way up into the sky and like up over you and you jump up and meet them in the air. And it's like, there's a potential for that to be kind of fun, but it's so fast and twitchy that it's like, okay, what am I actually aiming at, and what is my actual like methodology in terms of tactics can I actually employ to like try and like get them to stop jumping around everywhere, or like can I drop a building on someone like on the fly or whatever. So I think there's a lot of cool stuff. They've said on the tech side that it's about rendering or processing all of the damage on the server side so that everyone sees the same level as it falls apart, which is always the thing that killed physics deformation stuff in every other game, because they try to do it on the client side, which for whatever reason always led to different internet speeds and everything else.
Yeah.
So if they can nail the tech, I think that'll at least be cool. But the wider framing of it being another futuristic game show, you're probably bang on that it will be the thing that people just go, I can't do another one of these.
That's the
emojis and they've got to buy the skins and, oh God.
Like looking at just the UI where people were choosing their characters and they were choosing their skins and their setups and stuff, it did look so Fortnite. It looked so like kind of early Overwatch, which for me, that's just my aesthetic. I do want to end on a positive note.
Yes.
There is a glue gun in this game, just like there was in the Prey reboot, whereby you can launch big globs of glue around the environment and stick them together to create structures, to create potential cover in front
of bridges
you, or to build bridges from pathways that have otherwise been destroyed. Mm-hmm. And I love that there is a focus on rebuilding as much as there is destroying, because the glue gun is great in Prey. And to see that in a multiplayer setting is really cool.
We had, it was like a couple of years where it was like year of the bow and arrow, where like even Crysis 3 had the bow and arrow and they were everywhere. Sony kind of has that now. And then we had like the year of the grappling hook, and it's like that. Maybe 2024 or the rest of this year is the year of the glue gun.
Oh,
it's about time.
It is
about time.
Long overdue, Scott Tilford.
For now though, this has been The Wind Up. I've been Scott Tilford. That's been Josh Brown.
Always a pleasure.
Always a pleasure to be heard by all of you. And we'll catch you next week.
Bye-bye.
Goodbye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.